My name is T.E. Wolfe. This is A Word in Edgewise, story time for grown-ups. On tonight's program, part one of two, in honor of the Big Read, the national Big Read program that's happening in libraries across the country, book clubs, etc. Everybody's reading Ray Bradbury's Fahrenheit 451. We won't be reading the entire novel. It is, let's see here, approximately, about 180 pages. Not too long, but we're going to do two shows tonight and next week of excerpts from the first third of the book. A great book. A dystopian future, or utopian, depending on how you look at such things, where books are illegal and firemen perform a much different function than what we're used to. The novel was published in 1953 and takes place in an unknown year, sometime in our future. With me in the studio, the lovely Leia Farrell. And here we go. Fahrenheit 451. It was a pleasure to burn. It was a special pleasure to see things eaten, to see things blackened and changed. With the brass nozzle in his fists, with his great python spitting its venomous kerosene upon the world, the blood pounded in his head. And his hands were the hands of some amazing conductor playing all the symphonies of blazing and burning to bring down the tatters and charcoal ruins of history. With his symbolic helmet numbered 451 on his stolid head, and his eyes all orange flame with the thought of what came next, he flicked the igniter, and the house jumped up in a gorging fire that burned the evening sky red and yellow and black. He strode in a swarm of fireflies. He wanted, above all, like the old joke, to shove a marshmallow on a stick into the furnace, while the flapping, pigeon-winged books died on the porch and lawn of the house, while the books went up in sparkling whirls and blew away on a wind turned dark with burning. Montag grinned the fierce grin of all men singed and driven back by flame. He knew that when he returned to the firehouse, he might wink at himself, a minstrel man, burnt-corked in the mirror. Later, going to sleep, he would feel the fiery smile still gripped by his face muscles in the dark. It never went away, that smile. It never, ever went away, as long as he remembered. He hung up his black beetle-colored helmet and shined it. He hung his flame-proof jacket neatly. He showered luxuriously and then, whistling, hands in pockets, walked across the upper floor of the fire station and fell down the hole. At the last moment, when disaster seemed positive, he pulled his hands from his pockets and broke his fall by grasping the golden pole. He slid to a squeaking halt, the heels 1 inch from the concrete floor downstairs. He walked out of the fire station and along the midnight street toward the subway, where the silent, air-propelled train slid soundlessly down its lubricated flue in the earth, and let him out with a great puff of warm air onto the cream-tiled escalator rising to the suburb. Whistling, he let the escalator waft him into the still night air. He walked toward the corner, thinking little at all about nothing in particular. Before he reached the corner, however, he slowed as if a wind had sprung up from nowhere, as if someone had called his name. The last few nights, he had had the most uncertain feelings about the sidewalk just around the corner here, moving in the starlight toward his house. He'd felt that a moment prior to his making the turn, someone had been there. The air seemed charged with a special calm, as if someone had waited there, quietly. And only a moment before he came, simply turned to a shadow and let him through. Perhaps his nose detected a faint perfume. Perhaps the skin on the backs of his hands, on his face, felt the temperature rise at this one spot where a person's standing might raise the immediate atmosphere 10 degrees for an instant. There was no understanding it. Each time he made the turn, he saw only the white, unused, buckling sidewalk with perhaps, on one night, something vanishing swiftly across a lawn before he could focus his eyes on it. But now, tonight, he slowed almost to a stop, his inner mind reaching out to turn the corner for him. Had heard the faintest whisper. Breathing? Or was the atmosphere compressed merely by someone standing very quietly there, waiting? He turned the corner. The autumn leaves blew over the moonlit pavement in such a way as to make the girl who was moving there seem fixed to a sliding walk, letting the motion of the wind and the leaves carry her forward. Her head was half bent to watch her shoes stir the circling leaves. Her face was slender and milk white, and in it was a kind of gentle hunger that touched over everything with tireless curiosity. It was a look almost of pale surprise. The dark eyes were so fixed to the world that no move escaped them. Her dress was white, and it whispered. He almost thought he heard the motion of her hands as she walked, and the infinitely small sound now, the white stir of her face turning when she discovered she was a moment away from a man who stood in the middle of the pavement, waiting. The trees overhead made a great sound of letting down their dry rain. The girl stopped and looked as if she might pull back in surprise, but instead stood regarding Montag with eyes so dark and shining and alive that he felt he had said something quite wonderful. But he knew his mouth had only moved to say, "Hello." And then, when she seemed hypnotized by the salamander on his arm and the phoenix design on his chest, he spoke again. "Of course, you're our new neighbor, aren't you?" She raised her eyes from his professional symbols.
"And you must be the fireman."
"How oddly you say that."
"I'd have known with my eyes shut."
"What, the smell of kerosene? My wife always complains. You never wash it off completely."
"No, I guess you don't."
He felt she was walking in a circle about him, turning him end for end, shaking him quietly, and emptying his pockets without once moving herself. Kerosene, he said, because the silence had lengthened, is nothing but perfume to me.
Does it seem like that, really?
Of course. Why not?
I don't know.
She turned to face the sidewalk, going toward their homes.
Do you mind if I walk back with you? I'm Clarice McClellan.
Clarice. Guy Montag. Sure, come along. What are you doing out so late, wandering around? How old are you? They walked in the warm, cool, blowing night on the silvered pavement, and he knew she was working his questions around, seeking the best answers she could possibly give.
Well, I'm 17 and crazy. Michael says the two always go together. When people ask your age, he said, always say 17 and insane. Isn't this a nice time of night to walk? I like to smell things and look at things. Sometimes stay up all night, walking. Just watch the sunrise.
They walked on again in silence. And finally she said thoughtfully,
you know, I'm not afraid of you at all.
Why should you be?
So many people are. Afraid of firemen, I mean. But you're just a man, after all. Do you mind if I ask, how long have you worked at being a fireman?
Since I was 20, 10 years ago.
Do you ever read any of the books you burn?
Well, that's against the law.
Oh, of course.
It's fine work. Monday, burn Millet. Wednesday, Whitman. Friday, Faulkner. Burn them to ashes, then burn the ashes. That's our official slogan.
Is it true that long ago firemen put fires out instead of going to start them?
No. Houses have always been fireproof. Take my word for it.
Strange. I heard once that a long time ago houses used to burn by accident, and they needed firemen to stop the flames. Why are you laughing?
I don't know. Why?
You laugh when I haven't been funny, and you answer right off. You never stop to think about what I've asked you.
He stopped walking. You are an odd one. Haven't you any respect?
I don't mean to be insulting. It's just, I love to watch people too much, I guess.
Well, doesn't this mean anything to you? He tapped the numerals 451 stitched on his charcoaled sleeve.
Yes.
She started walking again, and he followed.
Have you ever watched the jet cars racing on the boulevards down that way?
You're changing the subject.
I sometimes think drivers don't know what grass is or flowers because they never see them. Have you ever just seen a blur of green and said, hey, that's grass, or a blur of pink and that's a rose garden? White blurs are houses, brown blurs are cows. My uncle drove slowly on the highway once. He drove 40 miles an hour and they jailed him for 2 days. Isn't that funny and sad, too?
You think too many things.
I rarely watch shows on the parlor walls or go to races and fun parks, so I have lots of time for crazy thoughts, I guess. Have you ever seen the 200-foot-long billboard that goes out in the country down that way? Did you know that once billboards were only 20 feet long? And cars started rushing by so quickly they had to stretch out the advertising so they would last.
Didn't know that.
Bet I know something else you don't. There's dew on the grass in the morning.
He suddenly couldn't remember if he had known this or not. It made him quite irritable.
And if you look, there's a man in the moon.
He hadn't looked for a long, long time. They walked the rest of the way in silence. Hers thoughtful, his a kind of clenching and uncomfortable silence in which he shot her accusing glances. When they reached her house, all its lights were blazing. "What's going on here?" Montag had rarely seen that many house lights.
"Oh, just my mother and father and uncle sitting around talking. It's like being a pedestrian, only rarer. My uncle was arrested another time, did I tell you, for being a pedestrian? Oh, we're most peculiar."
"But what do you talk about?"
"Good night."
She started up her walk. Then she seemed to remember something and came back to look at him with wonder and curiosity.
"Are you happy?"
"Am I what?" But she was gone, running in the moonlight. Her front door shut gently. Happy. Huh. All the nonsense. He stopped laughing. He put his hand into the glove hole of his front door and let it know his touch. The front door slid open. "Of course I'm happy. What does she think, I'm not?" he asked the quiet rooms. He stood looking up at the ventilator grill in the hall, and suddenly remembered that something lay hidden behind the grill, something that seemed to peer down at him now. He moved his eyes quickly away. What a strange meeting on a strange night. He remembered nothing like it save one afternoon a year ago when he had met an old man in the park, and they had talked. But this was different somehow. Montag shook his head. "Strange. Now she was there, and I almost felt her. Why, now that I think of it, she almost seemed to be waiting for me there in the street. So damn late at night." He opened the bedroom door. It was like coming into the cold, marbled room of a mausoleum after the moon has set. Complete darkness, not a hint of the silver world outside, the windows tightly shut, the chamber a tomb world where no sound from the great city could penetrate. The room was not empty. He listened. The little mosquito-delicate humming hum, dancing hum in the air, the electrical murmur of a hidden wasp snug in its special pink warm nest. The music was almost loud enough so he could follow the tune. He felt his smile slide away, melt, fold over and down on itself like a tallow skin. Like the stuff of a fantastic candle burning too long and now collapsing and blown out. Darkness. He was not happy. He was not happy, he said the words to himself. He recognized this as the true state of affairs. He wore his happiness like a mask, and the girl had run off across the lawn with the mask, and there was no way of going to knock on her door and ask for it back. Without turning on the light, he imagined how this room would look, his wife, stretched on the bed, uncovered and cold like a body displayed on the lid of a tomb, her eyes fixed to the ceiling by invisible threads of steel, immovable. And in her ears, the little seashells, the thimble radios tamped tight, an electronic ocean of sound, of music and talk coming in, on the shore of her unsleeping mind. This room was indeed empty. Every night the waves came in and bore her off on their great tides of sound, floating her wide-eyed toward morning. There had been no night in the last 2 years that Mildred had not swum that sea, had not gladly gone down in it for the third time. The room was cold, but nonetheless he felt he could not breathe. He did not wish to open the drapes and open the French windows, for he did not want the moon to come into the room. So with the feeling of a man who will die in the next hour for lack of air, he felt his way toward his bed, separate, open, and therefore cold. An instant before his foot hit the object on the floor, he knew he would hit such an object. It was not unlike the feeling he had experienced before turning the corner and almost knocking the girl down. His foot, sending vibrations ahead, received back echoes of the small barrier across its path, even as the foot swung and kicked. The object gave a dull clink and slid off in darkness. He stood very straight and listened to the person on the dark bed in the completely featureless night. The breath coming out of the nostrils was so faint it stirred only the farthest fringes of life. A small leaf, a black feather, a single fiber of hair. He still did not want outside light. He pulled out his igniter, felt the salamander etched on its silver disc, and gave it a flick. Two moonstones looked up at him in the light of his small handheld fire. Two pale moonstones buried in a creek of clear water over which the life of the world ran, not touching them. Mildred! Her face was like a snow-covered island upon which rain might fall, but it felt no rain. Over which clouds might pass their moving shadows, but she felt no shadow. There was only the singing of the thimble wasps in her tamped-shut ears, and her eyes all glass and breath going in and out softly, faintly, in and out of her nostrils, and her not caring whether it came or went or came. The object he had sent tumbling with his foot now glinted under the edge of his own bed. The small crystal bottle of sleeping tablets, which earlier today had been filled with 30 capsules, and which now lay uncapped and empty in the light of the tiny flare. The flare went out in his hand. The moonstones vanished. He felt his hand plunge toward the telephone. He stood there for several moments, unmoving, unable to form the words. And suddenly, he felt his lips move, brushing the mouthpiece of the phone. A terrible whisper. Emergency hospital. He stood shivering in the dark. Let his lips go on moving and moving. They had this machine. They had two machines, really. One of them slid down into your stomach like a black cobra down an echoing well, looking for all the old water and the old time gathered there. It drank up the green matter that flowed to the top in a slow boil. Did it drink of the darkness? Did it suck out all the poisons accumulated with the years? It fed in silence with an occasional sound of inner suffocation and blind searching. It had an eye. The impersonal operator of the machine could, by wearing a special optical helmet, gaze into the soul of the person whom he was pumping out. What did the eye see? He did not say. He saw, but did not see, what the eye saw. The entire operation was not unlike the digging of a trench in one's yard. The woman on the bed was no more than a hard stratum of marble they had reached. Go on, anyway, shove the bore down, slush up the emptiness. If such a thing could be brought out in the throb of the suction snake. The operator stood smoking a cigarette. The other machine was working, too. The other machine, operated by an equally impersonal fellow in non-stainable reddish-brown coveralls, this machine pumped all of the blood from the body and replaced it with fresh blood and serum. Gotta clean them out both ways, said the operator, standing over the silent woman. No use getting the stomach if you don't clean the blood. Leave that stuff in the blood hits the brain like a mallet. Bang! A couple thousand times, the brain just gives up. Just quits. Stop it, said Montag. I was just saying. Are you done? They shut the machines up tight. Yeah, we're done. Montag's anger did not even touch them. They stood with the cigarette smoke curling around their noses and into their eyes, without making them blink or squint. Well, that's $50. Yeah, first, why don't you tell me if she'll be all right? Sure, she'll be okay. We got all the mean stuff right here in our suitcase. You can't get at her now. As I said, you take out the old, you put in the new, and you're okay. Hell, neither one of you is an MD. Why didn't they send an MD from emergency? The operator's cigarette moved on his lip. You see, we get these cases 9 or 10 a night. You got so many starting a few years ago. We had the special machines built. With the optical lens, of course, that was new. The rest is ancient. You don't need an MD case like this. All you need is 2 handymen. Clean up the problem in 30 minutes. Look, we gotta go. Just had another call on the old ear thimble. 10 blocks from here. Someone else just jumped off the cap of a pillbox. So call if you need us again. And keep her quiet. We got a contraceptive in her. She'll wake up hungry. So long. And the men with the cigarettes in their straight-lined mouths, the men with the eyes of puff adders, took up their load of machine and tube, their case of liquid melancholy and the slow, dark sludge of nameless stuff, and strolled out the door. Montag sank down into a chair and looked at this woman. Her eyes were closed now, gently, and he put out his hand to feel the warmness of breath on his palm. Mildred, he said at last. There are too many of us, he thought. There are billions of us, and that's too many. Nobody knows anyone. Strangers come and violate you. Come and cut your heart out. Come and take your blood. Good God, who were those men? I never saw them before in my life. 30 minutes passed. The bloodstream in this woman was new. It seemed to have done a new thing to her. Her cheeks were pink and her lips were fresh and full of color. They looked soft and relaxed. Somebody else's blood there. If only it could be somebody else's flesh and brain and memory. If only they could have taken her mind along to the dry cleaners and emptied the pockets and steamed and cleansed it and reblocked it and brought it back in the morning. If only. He got up and put back the drapes and opened the windows wide to let the night air in. It was 2 o'clock in the morning. Was it only an hour ago? Clarice McClellan on the street, and him coming in the dark room and his foot kicking the little crystal bottle. Only an hour, but the world had melted down and sprung up in a new and colorless form. Laughter blew across the moon-colored lawn from the house of Clarice and her father and mother and the uncle who smiled so quietly and so earnestly. Above all, their laughter was relaxed and hearty and not forced in any way, coming from the house that was so brightly lit this late at night, while all the other houses were kept to themselves in darkness. Montag heard the voices talking, talking, weaving, reweaving their hypnotic web. He left the window wide, checked Mildred, tucked the covers about her carefully, and then lay down with the moonlight on his cheekbones, on the frowning ridges in his brow, and the moonlight distilled in each eye to form a silver cataract there. One drop of rain, Clarice. Another drop, Mildred. A third, the uncle. A fourth, the fire tonight. 1, 2, 3, 4. Storm, the uncle laughing, thunder falling downstairs, the whole world pouring down, the fire gushing up in a volcano, all rushing on down around in a sprouting roar, rivering stream toward morning. I don't know anything anymore, he said. And he let a sleep lozenge dissolve on his tongue. At 9 in the morning, Mildred's bed was empty. Montag got up quickly, his heart pumping, and he ran down the hall and stopped at the kitchen door. Toast popped out of the silver toaster, was seized by a spidery metal hand that drenched it with melted butter. Mildred watched the toast delivered to her plate. She had both ears plugged with electronic bees that were humming the hour away. She looked up suddenly, saw him, and nodded. "You all right?" he asked. She was an expert at lip-reading from 10 years of apprenticeship at Seashell Ear Thimbles. She nodded again. She set the toaster clicking away at another piece of bread. Montag sat down.
I don't know why I should be so hungry.
Well, you...
Oh, I'm so hungry.
Last night...
Didn't sleep well. Feel terrible. God, I'm hungry. Can't figure it.
Last night...
What about last night?
Don't you remember?
What? Did we have a wild party or something? I feel like I have a hangover. God, I'm hungry. Who was here?
A few people.
That's what I thought.
She chewed her toast.
Sore stomach. But I'm hungry as all get out. Hope I didn't do anything too foolish at the party.
No, he said quietly. The toaster spidered out a piece of buttered bread for him. He held it in his hand, feeling obligated.
You don't look so hot yourself.
In the late afternoon, it rained, and the entire world was dark and gray. He stood in the hall of his house, putting on his badge with the orange salamander burning across it. He stood there, looking up at the air conditioning vent in the hall, for a long time. His wife in the TV parlor paused long enough from reading her script to glance up.
Hey, the man's thinking.
Yes, I wanted to talk to you. You know, you took all the pills in your bottle last night.
Oh, I wouldn't do that.
The bottle was empty.
I wouldn't do a thing like that. Why would I do anything like that?
Well, maybe you took two pills and forgot, took two more and forgot again, and took two more and were so dopey you kept right on until you had 30 or 40 of them in you.
Oh, heck. What would I want to go and do a silly thing like that for?
I don't know.
I didn't do that. Never in a billion years.
All right, if you say so.
That's what the lady said.
She turned back to her script. So, what's on this afternoon? She didn't look up from the script again.
Well, this is a play, comes on the wall-to-wall circuit in 10 minutes. They mailed me my part this morning. I sent in box tops. They write the script with one part missing. That's a new idea. The homemaker, that's me. It's the missing part. When it comes time for the missing lines, they all look at me out of the three walls, and I say the lines. Here, for instance, the man says, "What do you think about this whole idea, Helen?" And he looks at me sitting there center stage C, and I say...
She paused and ran her finger under a line on the script.
"I think that's fine." And they go on with the play until he says, "Do you agree with that, Helen?" And I say, "I sure do. Isn't that fun, guy?"
He stood in the hall, looking at her.
"It's sure fun."
"What's the play about?"
"I just told you. There are these people named Bob, Ruth, and Helen."
"Oh."
"It's really fun. It'll be even more fun when we can afford to have that fourth wall installed. How long do you figure it'll be before we can save up to get that fourth wall torn out and the fourth TV put in? It's only $2,000.
Yeah, that's one third of my yearly pay.
That's only $2,000, and I should think you'd consider me sometimes. If we had a fourth wall, why, be just like this wasn't our room, but all kinds of exotic people's rooms. We could do without a few things."
"We're already doing without a few things to pay for the third wall. It was put in only 2 months ago, remember?"
"Is that all it was? Well, goodbye, dear."
"Goodbye." He stopped and turned around. "Does it have a happy ending?"
"I haven't read that far."
He walked over, read the last page, nodded, folded the script and handed it back to her. He walked out of the house, into the rain.
"If you want to have fun, come on with me. You can stay all night and play with my TV. TV is the thing this year. TV is the thing this year. Radio is great, but it's out of date. TV is the thing this year. Last night I was watching Old Time Mix. My TV broke and I was in a fix. I got on the phone to call my man and said, 'Get here, Daddy, as fast as you can. TV is the thing this year. TV is the thing this year. Radio is great, but it's out of date. TV is the thing this year.'" Yeah, TV is the TV is the thing this year.
I put a seashell in my ear and it all comes back.
The rain was thinning away and the girl was walking in the center of the sidewalk with her head up and the few drops falling on her face. She smiled when she saw Montag.
Hello.
Hello. What are you up to now?
I'm still crazy. The rain feels good. I love to walk in it.
I don't think I'd like that.
You might if you tried.
I never have.
Rain tastes good, too.
What do? Go around trying everything once?
Sometimes twice.
She looked at something in her hand. What have you got there?
I guess it's the last of the dandelions this year. I didn't think I'd find one on the lawn this late. Have you ever heard of rubbing one under your chin? Look.
She touched her chin with the flower, laughing. Why do that?
If it rubs off, it means I'm in love. Has it?
He could hardly do anything else but look.
Well?
You're yellow under there.
Fine. Let's try you now.
It won't work for me.
Here.
Before he could move, she had put the dandelion under his chin. He drew back, and she laughed.
Hold still.
She peered under his chin and frowned. Well?
What a shame. You're not in love with anyone.
Yes, I am.
It doesn't show.
Well, I am. I'm very much in love. He tried to conjure up a face to fit the words, but there was no face. I am.
Oh, please don't look that way.
It's just that dandelion. You've used it all up on yourself. That's why it won't work for me.
Of course, that must be it. Oh, now I've upset you. I can see I have. I'm sorry, really I am.
No, I'm all right.
I've got to be going. Say you forgive me. I don't want you angry with me.
I'm not angry. Upset, yes.
I've got to go see my psychiatrist now. They make me go. I make up things to say. I don't know what he thinks of me. He says I'm a regular onion. I keep him busy peeling the layers away.
I'm inclined to believe you need the psychiatrist.
You don't mean that.
No, I don't mean that.
The psychiatrist wants to know why I go out and hike in the woods and why I watch the birds and collect butterflies. I'll show you my collection someday.
Good.
They want to know what I do with my time. I tell them that sometimes I just like to sit and think, but I don't tell them what I think about. I've got them running. And sometimes I tell them I like to put my head back, like this, and let the rain fall in my mouth. It tastes just like wine. Have you ever tried it?
No, I...
Have you forgiven me?
Sure, yeah. Yeah, I have. God knows why. You're peculiar, you're aggravating, yet you're easy to forgive. You say you're 17?
Well, next month.
How odd. How strange. You're my wife, 30, and yet you seem so much older than her at times. I can't get over it.
You're peculiar yourself, Mr. Montag. Sometimes I even forget you're a fireman. Now, may I make you angry again?
Go ahead.
How did it start? How did you get into it? How did you pick your work, and how does it happen that you thought of taking a job like that? You're not like the others. I've seen a few, I know. When I talk, you look at me. When I said something about the moon, you looked at the moon last night. The others would never do that. The others would walk off and just leave me talking or threaten me. No one has time anymore for anyone else. You're one of the few people who put up with me. That's why I think you're so strange. Being a fireman just doesn't seem right for you somehow.
He felt his body divide itself into a hotness and a coldness, a softness and a hardness, a trembling and a calm, the two halves grinding one upon the other. Well, you better run on to your appointment. and she ran off and left him standing there in the rain. Only after a long time did he move. And then, very slowly, as he walked, he tilted his head back in the rain for just a few moments and opened his mouth. One, two, three, four, five, six, 7 days of it. And as many times he came out of the house and Clarice was there somewhere in the world. Once he saw her shaking a walnut tree. Once he saw her sitting on the lawn knitting a blue sweater. 3 or 4 times he found a bouquet of late flowers on his porch, or a handful of chestnuts in a little sack, or some autumn leaves pinned neatly to a sheet of white paper and thumbtacked to his door. Every day Clarice walked him to the corner. One day it was raining, the next it was clear. The day after that the wind blew strong, and the day after that it was mild and calm. The day after that calm day was a day like the furnace of summer, and Clarice with her face all sunburnt by late afternoon. "Why is it," he said one time at the subway entrance, "I feel I've known you so many years?"
"Because I like you, and I don't want anything from you, and because we know each other."
"You make me feel very old and very much like a father."
"Now you explain to me why you haven't any daughters like me if you love children so much."
"I don't know."
"You're joking."
"No, I mean, well, my wife, she just never wanted any children at all."
"I'm sorry. I really thought you were having fun at my expense. I'm a fool."
No, it was a good question. It's been a long time since anyone cared enough to ask. Good question."
"Let's talk about something else. Have you ever smelled old leaves? Don't they smell like cinnamon? Here, smell."
"Yes, it is like cinnamon, in a way."
"You always seem shocked."
"It's just I haven't had time to..."
"Did you look at the stretched-out billboard like I told you?"
"I think so, yes."
"Your laugh sounds much nicer than it did."
"Does it?"
"Much more relaxed."
"Why aren't you in school? I see you every day wandering around."
"Oh, they don't miss me. I'm antisocial, they say. I don't mix. It's so strange. I'm very social indeed." "It all depends on what you mean by social, doesn't it? Social to me means talking to you about things like this. Or talking about how strange the world is. Being with people is nice, but I don't think it's social to get with a bunch of people and never talk, do you? An hour of TV class, or an hour of basketball or baseball or running, another hour of transcription history or painting pictures and more sports. Do you know, we never ask questions, or at least most don't. They just run the answers at you, bing, 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 and leave us sitting there for 4 more hours in front of this film teacher. That's not social to me at all. It's a lot like funnels and a lot of water being poured through the spouts and down out through the bottom and telling us it's wine when it's not. They run us so ragged by the end of the day we can't do anything but go to bed or head to the fun park and bully people, break window panes in the window smasher place, or wreck cars in the car wrecking place with a steel ball, go out and play cars and race in the streets trying to see how close we can get to the lamppost, playing chicken or knocking hubcaps. I guess I'm everything they say I am, all right. I haven't any friends. That's supposed to prove I'm abnormal. But everyone I know is either shouting or dancing around like wild and beating up one another. Do you notice how people hurt one another nowadays?"
"You sound so very old."
"Sometimes I'm ancient. I'm afraid of children my own age. They kill each other. Did it always used to be this way? My uncle says no. 6 of my classmates have been shot in the last year. 10 of them died in car wrecks. I'm afraid of them, and they don't like me because I'm afraid. My uncle says his grandfather remembered when children didn't kill each other. But that was a long time ago when they had things different. They believed in responsibility, my uncle says. And do you know, I'm responsible. I do all the shopping and house cleaning by hand. But most of all, I like to watch people. Sometimes I ride the subway all day and look at them, and I listen to them. I want to figure out who they are and what they want and where they're going. Sometimes I even go to the fun parks and ride the jet cars when they race along the edge of town at midnight, and the police don't care as long as they have insurance. As long as everyone has 10,000 insurance, everyone's happy. Sometimes I sneak around in the subway and I listen to them and I listen at the soda fountains. And do you know what?
What?
People don't talk about anything.
Oh, they must.
No, not anything. They name a lot of cars and clothes and swimming pools. Mostly they just say, how swell. But nobody really says anything. And most of the time, when I'm at the arcade, they have these joke boxes on and the same jokes all the time. Or the music walls lit and the colored patterns running up and down. But it's only color and all abstract. And all the museums, well, have you ever been? All abstract. That's all there is now. My uncle says it was different once. A long time back, sometimes pictures said things and even showed people.
Your uncle said... Your uncle must be a very remarkable man.
Oh, he is. He certainly is. Well, I've got to be going. Goodbye, Mr. Montag.
Goodbye, Clarice.
Goodbye.
It was the last time he ever saw her. The mechanical hound slept, but did not sleep. Lived, but did not live, in its gently humming, gently vibrating, softly illuminated kennel back in a dark corner of the firehouse. The dim light of 1 a.m, the moonlight from the open sky framed through the great window, touched here and there on the brass and the copper and the steel of the faintly trembling beast. Light flickered on bits of ruby glass and on sensitive capillary hairs in the nylon-brushed nostrils of the creature that quivered gently, gently, its 8 legs spidered under it on rubber-padded paws. Montag slid down the brass pole. He went out to look at the city. He lit a cigarette, came back to bend down and look at the hound. It was like a great bee come home from some field where the honey is full of poison wildness, of insanity and nightmare, its body crammed with that over-rich nectar, and now it was sleeping the evil out of itself. Hello, whispered Montag, fascinated as always with the dead beast, the living beast. Nights, when things got dull, which was every night, the men slid down the brass poles and set the ticking combinations of the olfactory system of the hound and let loose rats in the firehouse areaway. Sometimes chickens, sometimes cats that have to be drowned anyway. There would be betting to see which of the cats or chickens or rats the hound would seize first. The animals were turned loose. 3 seconds later, the game was done. The rat, cat, or chicken caught half across the areaway, gripped by gentling paws while a 4-inch hollow steel needle plunged down from the proboscis of the hound to inject massive jolts of morphine or procaine. The pawn was then tossed in the incinerator, and a new game began. Montag stayed upstairs most nights when this went on. There had been a time 2 years ago when he had bet with the best of them and lost a week's salary and faced Mildred's insane anger, which showed itself in veins and blotches. But now nights he lay in his bunk, face turned to the wall, listening to the whoops of laughter below and the piano string scurry of rat feet, the violin squeaking of mice, the great shadowing, motioned silence of the hound leaping out like a moth in the raw light, finding, holding its victim, inserting the needle and going back to its kennel to die as if a switch had been turned. Montag touched the muzzle. The hound growled. Montag jumped back. The hound half rose in its kennel and looked at him with green-blue neon lights flickering in its suddenly activated eye bulbs. It growled again, a strange rasping combination of electrical sizzle, a frying sound, a scraping of metal, a turning of cogs that seemed rusty and ancient with suspicion. No, boy, no, said Montag, his heart pounding. He saw the silver needle extend upon the air an inch. Pull back. Extend. Pull back. The growl simmered in the beast, and it looked at him. Montag backed up. The hound took a step from its kennel. Montag grabbed the brass pole with one hand. The pole, reacting, slid upward and took him through the ceiling, quietly. He stepped off in the half-lit deck of the upper level. He was trembling, and his face was greenish-white. Below, the hound had sunk back down upon its eight incredible insect legs and was humming to itself again, its multifaceted eyes at peace. Montag stood letting the fears pass by the drop hole. Behind him, four men at a card table under a green-lidded light in the corner glanced briefly but said nothing. Only the man with the captain's hat and the sign of the phoenix on his hat at last, curious, his playing cards in his thin hand, talked across the room. Montag?
It doesn't like me, said Montag.
What? The hound? Said the captain, studying his cards. Come off it. It doesn't like or dislike. It just functions. It's like a lesson in ballistics. It has a trajectory we decide on for it. It follows through. It targets itself, homes itself, and cuts off. It's only copper wire, storage batteries, and electricity. Montag swallowed. Its calculators can be set to any combination. So many amino acids, so much sulfur, so much butterfat and alkaline, right?
Yes, we all know that.
All of those chemical balances and percentages on all of us here in the house are recorded in the master file downstairs. It would be easy for someone to set up a partial combination on the hound's memory, a touch of amino acids, perhaps. That would account for what the animal did just now, reacted toward me.
Oh, hell.
Oh, you see, irritated, but not completely angry. Just enough memory set up in it by someone, so it growled when I touched it.
Who would do a thing like that? You haven't any enemies here, Guy.
None that I know of.
We'll have the hound checked by our technicians tomorrow.
This isn't the first time it's threatened me. Last month it happened twice.
We'll fix it up, don't worry.
But Montag did not move and only stood thinking of the ventilator grill in the hall at home and what lay hidden behind the grill. If someone here in the firehouse knew about the ventilator, then might they not tell the hound? The captain came over to the drop hole and gave Montag a questioning glance.
I was just figuring, said Montag. What does the hound think about down there at night? Is it coming alive on us, really? It makes me cold.
It doesn't think anything we don't want it to think.
That's sad, said Montag quietly, because all we put into it is hunting and finding and killing. What a shame if that's all it can ever know.
Beatty snorted gently.
Hell, it's a fine bit of craftsmanship. A good rifle that can fetch its own target and guarantees the bullseye every time.
That's why, said Montag. That's why I wouldn't want to be its next victim.
Why do you say that? You got a guilty conscience about something?
Montag glanced up swiftly. Beatty stood there looking at him steadily with his eyes, while his mouth opened and began to laugh very softly.
Oh, Thank you.